mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 405. I'm Adam, and here's Mary Lang. Mary Lang.
You just leave it to me, K9. I know exactly what I'm doing.
Debbie Melrose.
Was that smooth enough for you, Doctor?
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
It's funny, they always want you to go alone when you're walking into a trap. Have you noticed that?
Did anybody get my quote? That's probably more the cryptic quotes that has ever
you
been.
You were being the really silent king.
No.
You were being the android, yeah.
No.
What then?
I was being the dog whistle. K9's dog whistle.
Oh. Dogs very good.
I love how during these seasons he's using that dog whistle a lot.
He's in a funny
mood. So the dog is in a funny mood. It's just been reported from my other room reporter. We have a dog in a funny mood.
Home magic.
So here we are back again. I didn't want to put it off another week, despite the fact that I haven't really got a voice. And therefore, it's going to be a bit difficult for me to do the show. However, I am here and we're going to start straight off with the girls talking about their absence of last week and what they thought of the previous episode of the show. And I can have a cough. Go on then.
Okay. Well, Stone's Blood, I watched it a couple of times because obviously we had a bit of a longer time to watch it. And I actually really enjoyed this one because it reminded me very much of a story. I'd never seen it. And it reminded me very much of a story that I'd written when I had to sit a mock English exam at school. And for some reason, I'm sat in the middle of this huge hall with loads of people sat on individual desks all around me, all quiet, just the ticking of a clock. And we had to write a story about time travel. And I picked stones and touching them and going back to Roman times and only being able to see the Roman times by touching the stones. And this reminded me very much of that. So I was very enamored from the start.
You're very what?
Yeah, I got jacked up into top set English straight after it as well. So I think my teachers liked it as well. Yeah, I'm really quite enjoying this hunt for the keys, the pieces of the keys of time. And this episode was really funny. But from the beginning, it was a funny episode. I felt it wasn't too serious. It was tongue in cheek. There were, by the time we got to the odd trial at the end, which seemed very much uncalled for the fact that they'd just opened a door and he was going to be suddenly condemned to death for opening a door. I just found the whole idea of her running around in those shoes was brilliant. And the two ladies, obviously, Vivian Faux and the professor, she was fantastic. I love it when we meet an eccentric that out-eccentrics the doctor. And I just thought it was a really, having watched it a second time, it was just a really good romp through the whole idea of hyperspace as well. And you knew she was going to be a baddie the way she very much, when we first met Vivian Faux, she reminded me very much of the Master. And as soon as I met her, and I was like, ah, baddie, there you go. And and the idea of the stones sucking the blood off from people and turning up outside that poor couple's tent was very spooky, very creepy. And this episode of Doctor Who really, this story of Doctor Who really did appeal to all my fun and silly and fantastical senses. And I really enjoyed it.
Okay. What do you think about it then, Mary?
Well, I have to confess, the last time we saw this, what was it, back in 2013, I think, we saw this one. It didn't make a lot of sense to me then. But this time around, it clicked, and I liked it much more. And just a interesting little side note, if you didn't already talk about this, this was the 100th story put out for Doctor Who, and Tom Baker and Mary Tam wanted to open the story with the two of them eating cake in the TARDIS as a celebration thing. But the writers were like, oh, no, we don't know what to do with that. We don't know how to write that in, so they were like kiboshing it. Well, they got as far as bringing the cake in and being ready to do it when they were caught, because they were going to try and sneak it into the scene somehow, but they got caught and it never got filmed.
What a shame. I didn't know that. What a shame.
Tom Baker was going to say something, you know, about 100th story, something in the 100s, so that, that, you know, people wouldn't know why they were doing it. But
it wouldn't necessarily have been broadcast in that order, though, would it? Hey. Right.
So they, I'm sorry, what?
I said it wouldn't necessarily have been broadcast in that order, would it? Possibly. I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. That could have been another possibility, is that it's not the 100th one broadcast. Yeah.
They'd leap on that right away now, wouldn't they? They'd be like, yes, let's do it.
But I could see the two of them doing it, because you can tell in every one of these stories that the two of them are having a lot of fun.
This is what I'm enjoying about this series, though. I must say, this whole arc, story arc, is the fact that it's fun. And you can feel it.
The things that on the downside were that so much fun was made of things that could have been scary. Mm-hmm. That it robbed it of any real scariness. The scariest thing that happened were to those two campers when they reach out and touch the stone. I mean, that was truly shocking. But otherwise, I felt like, this whole thing was just kind of a romp, because as soon as something would get a little tense or scary, then there would be jokes that would follow. So so I wasn't too fond of that aspect of it. And I will probably address that again in the next story that we're going to do in a different way. But for the most part, I did enjoy it, mostly because I think that Tom Baker and Mary Tam are having a good time.
It really is palpable,
fun
that's happening. Yeah, and I agree with what you say. Yes, if that had been sort of treated with a little bit more seriousness, then that would have been a truly shocking moment. But I'm thinking, because it's supposed to be for kids, that's why they did it. That's why they made it lighthearted. It very much reminded me of the way they dealt with the tripods. So, Oh, hello.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it.
Okay, thank you, girls. Most of you could have turned up last week to do that, but never mind. Right.
Yeah, instead you had me rambling on for I don't know how I sounded.
Okay, Laurie Nick says on Facebook again, you tricksy so-and-so.
What have you done now?
I'm giving it one last go on Facebook because I couldn't be bothered to set up the YouTube thingy. Anyway, all right, so we're into Stones of Blood. We just talked about that, sorry. Androids of Tara. And
you mean Prisoner of Zenda.
it begins with the Doctor playing chess with K-9. And Romana swanning around the TARDIS console with a white sort of frock on. The TARDIS console room looks particularly small in this scene, I should point out. Just notice this. Very, very small console room. Looked bigger. Obviously,
that's,
dimension.
Master?
What?
That's the same dress that she wore at the in the first story of hers.
So I was talking about the console room, and you decided to talk about the dress.
Yeah, it did look the same.
Yeah,
but then for the rest of the story, she wears, I guess her astrologer told her, this is your purple story.
She designed that, Mary Tam designed that, because apparently the original suit or outfit that she was supposed to wear was unsuitable, so she decided to just do that herself. But yeah, it does strike you as the purple suit, doesn't it?
The suit was unsuitable.
Even as the princess android, she was in purple.
Purple.
The other thing about it, though, is she picks it out from an alphabetically list of
things
in the wardrobe room, and this is apparently what they wear on Tara, but that no one else wears anything close to that.
Right. Yeah. Hey, so you wonder what era on Tara this was fashionable.
Okay, anyway. Right, so they obviously go back their normal sort of pre-episode shenanigans, and like you say, she picks out a suit. And
good game of chess going on as well.
They arrive on Tara, point the stick in the appropriate direction, and
they go off, don't they?
They go off in separate directions, and Romana finds the Key to Time, the statue, very quickly, and then gets attacked by a strange man in a gorilla costume. Well, sort yes, of a glory costume, what we call it. Allegedly helped by, is it Grendel? I can't remember his name. His name's terrible. Is it Grendel, anybody?
Grendel, yeah, his name's
Grendel. Master?
Hello, anybody there? As well, yes, we lost the Skype connection or something.
I agreed with you.
Good grief.
And Kirby's trying to get your attention.
Yeah. Oh, no. Hang on.
Can you not hear us?
Can you not hear us?
Hang on, you're going to have to... Hang on. What's going on?
Apparently not.
Apparently can't hear us.
Right. Can we three hear us?
Well, I don't know why I'm there, but I can hear you. Right there.
Yeah, we've been commenting, and you've been acting like you couldn't hear us.
That's because I couldn't hear you. Anyway, right.
I was going to point out that it's pretty clear that this wasn't, unlike some of the other stories, this one was not written directly to feature the Key to Time, because it was just inserted there. So she finds it, and
then it crops up again a little bit later.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they put it in sort of, but no, the story existed. The idea of doing the prisoner's end had been around for about a year.
Okay. Anyway, so she goes off with Grendel, and who's very charming at this point of the story. And the Doctor, meanwhile, is having a bit of a lie down. Did you have a bit of a snooze?
Is that his real nose, or is that a fake nose?
This is real nose. Don't be absurd.
His real nose, Kirby.
I wondered too, because it seemed too big for his face.
That's what he looks like, yeah.
What's good enough for Ringo Starr is good enough for the bloke who played Grendel. Anyway, the Doctor is having a nice nap, and somebody pokes at him with a sword that has a little spark at the end of it. And they threaten him with swords and stuff. And then Romana gets taken off to a castle. I'm just now going to have a cough. Just talk amongst yourselves or so. I'm back again.
Yep.
Oh, God. The castle actually reminds me a little bit of Core Abbey, actually. It's not Core Abbey, but the little gate reminds me.
Yes, the gate bit was, yeah, very much so.
And and then Romana gets put in a sort of a room with a woman with a very strange, sneaky markings on her face.
Master?
Oh, God.
And Debbie, have either of you visited Leeds Castle?
No.
No.
And and then they obviously think she's an android, so they go about planning to do a little bit of work on her. And the Doctor gets taken back to a little house where the prince is, and an android. Is it the android prince and the prince, I believe. And the woman with the wiggly lines on her face decides she's going to cut Romana's throat, and Romana tries to point out
take her head off, aren't they? They're going to take her head off.
She's hurt her ankle, and she didn't have any cold water to help her with her ankle.
Where was the magic water and the magic hanky?
I just said that. And it turns out that she just about managed to convince them she was a person. And they've got the Doctor and his little crew have got an android of the prince that doesn't do much, just looks like him. And right at the end of the episode, they decide they've got a little plan, so they toast their plan with a little bit of wine. I thought the Doctor didn't drink much wine. I know Pertwee's Doctor did, but... Oh, yes, of course. Tom Baker's Doctor did in A Brain of Morbius. He didn't learn his lesson. And
yes, exactly, same thing.
He gets knocked out. And evil pantomime villain Grendel stands in the doorway, snickering to himself.
I love the sound of the beakers on the floor, because they're supposed to be like metallic, and then they dropped them all, and it was just plastic going ding 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 all the way over the
floor. I didn't notice that. Laurie says,
"Isn't it fascinating, Master?
Yes.
Isn't it fascinating how in two stories plus going off into the beginning of the next season, we have Romana, who is also has a princess double." And then we have a princess who Romana decides to become her double.
Yes, indeed.
They liked it so much from this one, they decided to do it again.
And again,
I guess
again.
So.
Yes. Yes. Laurie Nix says, I like his hideous grey hooter.
And that was another thing, because it was another color. His nose had that grey tone, so that's what made me think.
Yeah, I'll say that's just bad makeup.
And the wart looks fake.
Oh, I don't know about the wart. Anyway, so the Doctor wakes up again, being threatened by a sword because they think he's a traitor or whatever, because they've taken the prince. And,
but they didn't look in the other room for the android.
No, they must have done something to the prince between now and having the prince in prison, because he became ill from this point onwards.
He was stabbed.
Oh, I didn't see that bit. Who stabbed him?
They say it in the dungeon, don't they?
Yes.
He's been stabbed.
Anyway, so at this point...
And also, during the wedding scene, he's standing there holding where he was stabbed.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so...
Yeah, Fred and I were discussing that last night when we were watching it for the second time.
I quite like this scene, so I'm going to play
Kirby for the win.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, this is the scene. I like this scene. Have a listen to this.
Now, look here, Zadok. I've got better things to do than meddle in the politics of your piffling little planet. On the other hand, I could be with the android at all times.
Yeah, so I quite like that scene. It's at that point that he does that. I removed the wrong slider at that point. that he blows his little whistle, which was my quote, and wakes up K-9.
Master?
Yes,
Master.
What? Yes, what?
Nothing. You're waking us up.
Anyway, so Romana, meanwhile, has had a bit of a snooze. Or was that the android
12
Romana?
12 hours she was out, and she didn't like that, did she?
And then we see there's a Princess Strella, is it, that looks exactly like Romana, conveniently. And,
isn't that amazing?
And good saving money on the car.
She likes purple, too.
It's uncanny, isn't it?
Yes, I wonder if they... Because she played three characters in this, Romana, Android Romana,
four.
And Strella.
Four.
Yeah. Who's the fourth one?
Four. She played the android princess as well that gets her head caved in by the Doctor.
Oh, I thought that was the same one as the android.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she plays an android Romana and an android princess.
Yep.
Ah. Oh, okay. Oh, I see. I didn't pick up on that. okay, so I wonder if she got paid four times. For playing four characters.
Probably not, yeah.
Anyway, so...
It was the Romana android when she shot purple shots out of her body.
Yes. I'll tell you what, though. Grendel's taken a bit of a shine to her.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And
that lady didn't like it, did she?
No. And she's locked
Lamia.
In a cell with the prince. Prince is sort of a bit confused by this because he thinks that she's Strella and she's not.
I must admit, I picked up from some reason, I think in the first or second one, I picked up that she was his sister. And then when they started talking about getting married, I was like, what's going on here? And I had to go back and have another look because
you know the history of royalty and then who they tend to marry.
I thought they were doing Game of Thrones, you know.
Game Sisters of Thrones, are there you go. That's where Game of Thrones got the idea from.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, I do love the acting of the bloke who plays the prince when he's the android, but when the Doctor and his team start making their way to the castle, he just does this sort of blank face all the time. It's really, really quite
good. Yeah, he was
and
good.
His slow speech. I love the way he slurs his speech that as well. That is so cool.
So, while messing around with an android head, Wiggly Hair Woman decides to have a little go at the Key to Time crystal. And tries to have a drill at it and stuff like that. Just an inserted scene here to show.
But if you look at it, she does actually mark it and they have to pan away.
She's
pressing
that.
So hard, she does actually leave a streak down it.
Oh, I didn't see that. the prince is sweating a bit. And
Lamia is named after the, in Greek mythology, a woman who became a child-eating monster. After her children were destroyed by Hera.
Thank you. Right.
I'd love that.
Yeah. So I say Romana and the prince are getting to know each other, and Romana gets taken out of the little cell, and the Doctor and his little team sneak the android prince into the thing, because obviously Grendel is trying to make out that. You know, the prince is dead, so he can take the throne.
I found it a bit weird that they have such amazing technology to make androids, and yet, you know, it was very medieval setting, so it was very peculiar.
Yes. Anyway, so his plan is nearly coming to fruition, and it gets all scuppered by the fact that they bring in the android prince, and, of course, the Doctor's managed to fix it enough to do a speech. And then we see Cyril Chaps, good old Cyril Chaps. Cyril Chaps' last appearance in Doctor Who, but again, playing a Cyril Chapsy type character. Yeah, he's very, very much similar to the other characters he's played in Doctor Who.
He's very, very Cyril Chaps.
Yeah. And he's basically like the Cardinal of... he's like the Archduke of... Hang on. The Canterbury bloke. Archbishop of Canterbury, that's the one. I'm not very well, by the way, everybody else. I'm struggling here a little bit. Anyway, right. So, yeah, he comes...
I called the Archimandrite.
I've got a sore tongue. Uh-huh.
Or Archimandrite. Archimandrite.
What are you talking about?
Cyril Chaps.
That's what his character's name is, or title, or something.
Archimandrite, I don't know.
Anyway, they're all told to kneel before the king, and of course Grendel is a bit reluctant to do so. And they crown the king, well, the android king, and he does his speech, which is, like I say, is really, really good. And then the android Romana comes in. Android princess comes in, and the doctor runs and bashes her over her head.
Yeah, clocks her one. Yeah.
Just as well he got that right, though, innit? Could have been a bit awkward.
But you can see how shocking that would have been to the viewers at the time.
Oh, yeah. My God. I mean, it was shocking to me, because I know how she probably was there in place of the princess.
Yeah. Mm. I think maybe the doctor sussed that Romana would have recognised him, so he can hit it over the head and not worry too much about it. Anyway, so meanwhile...
The technology is always so funny to me, because of these giant circuit boards.
Yes.
Yeah, the intricacies of an android that looks so human.
Yeah. And a little part of a hairdryer for its mouth, I quite like that. Anyway, so Romana tries to explain to a curly, wiggly, blind woman what the segment to the Key to Time is. There's also like a character that looks a bit like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, who's
the Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, yeah.
Did he actually play Jabba the Hutt?
He actually played Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah,
yes, he did, yeah, but they were going for the human version,
wasn't
it? Yeah. I posted a link to a YouTube video showing that original stuff for the film Star Wars.
Yeah,
I love that.
They later took that same section of film, put a CG Jabba on there for the
very
special
cleverly
editions.
Done too. I've seen that extra.
And make Han step on his tail because he goes around him. Yeah.
Yeah, and they also removed the actor's voice and replaced it with Hattie's, of course.
Yes, again, very, very cleverly done, Kirby. So anyway, they wire a Romana up to a machine.
Wait, what are you laughing at?
I love the way you went.
It's Greedo.
Oi! It's like having Andy back on. What was that noise?
I memorized Greedo's speech back in 1977.
Who messed around with their microphone?
I was born in 1977.
Who messed around with their microphone?
Not me.
Somebody did. Anyway, right.
Mine's over there.
Somebody did.
My microphone is sitting on a...
Somebody hit their microphone.
Touch it.
Anyway, right, back to the story. Right, so Romana finally meets one of her android companions, and they test out the Romana android because it's going to kill the doctor, and it kills a little dummy just to show that was what it's going to do. And Grendel's plan is coming to fruition. He's got a new plan. His new plan is to
kill everybody in the whole world.
Yeah, no, he's going to kill the prince, become king, marry Strella, and then kill her. Or something like that.
Yeah, kill the prince, and then marry once the prince has married the princess, kill the prince, then 5 minutes later, apparently, marry the princess. Yeah.
Yes. And then kill the princess.
So she goes on a little campaign to go and see the doctor, and Romana herself escapes and tries to ride away on a dumb horse. And doesn't get seen by the guard who's right behind her, which is, that guard should be fired, to be fair. And,
but that's the whole idea of inept guards, isn't it?
What, being useless? Hang on. I'm going to have to cough.
You should be in bed, Mr. Pearson.
Well, whatever. I've been working all day.
If I lived as close as you guys do to these castles and stuff, I would have found the time to go over
Excuse
there.
Excuse me, Leeds Castle is not close by.
Really? Okay, then, Kirby, why don't you come up to Chicago TARDIS more often? You're real close.
There you go. I get a bit like, what, when you say that? It's like, do you not realise how far away it is?
Well, Norris Castle's quite close by, and we can't be going there because it's private land. Anyway, right, so Norris Castle's right next to Osborne House, isn't it, Debbie?
Yes, it is.
In fact, if you travel from the house of Osborne down to the beach, you sort of can see Netley Castle. What's the other one called? What's the castle I was just talking about? Norris?
Leeds Castle. Yeah.
Norris Castle, as you go down where that little fox is. Have you been there recently? There's a lovely fox that lives down the lane.
I haven't been there for a while.
The drivers of the minibuses feed as they're going up and down the lane. Anyway, right, so Wiggly Hare goes in to meet the doctor, but unfortunately her plan doesn't quite work.
He can't hear me again.
Ducks.
Or he's ignoring me.
And K-9 also zaps her. And then they kill a wiggly haired woman. Gwenda seems a bit miffed by this. Very
I think
briefly.
He can't hear me again, or he's ignoring me.
Maybe because she was quite a good engineer and he needed
to
sort
me?
Out the androids. He wasn't particularly impressed by that. And then K-9 sort of blasts a few things here and there.
I guess when he realizes that he's not hearing anything.
They try to get the android working. He's not working particularly well. That's your android prince, by the way. So they have to make their way back to the
Bueller.
And of course the others grab something or other. Oh, is it that Renly is right away? They're just about to shoot with their crossbows, and the doctor stops him because he notices Romana on the back. And that's the end. That's a strange cliffhanger, that.
Bueller?
Isn't it? Bueller. It's not really a cliffhanger. It's just, the doctor saves Romana's life. End of episode.
He'd be telling us off big time by now.
You've gone again, haven't you?
Yeah.
I hate this. I mean, why is it not doing what I wanted to do?
God, we're here!
All right. I'll put it for an hour and a half. I'm not going to be on here for that long. Okay, right. Episode 4.
Can you hear us yet?
Yes, I can hear you.
Us now.
Sadly.
No, you couldn't hear us for a while there.
No, I couldn't. Hoo-hoo. Anyway,
Would the listeners be able to hear us? Because we were shouting.
Yes, of course, they can come in hear you. Like I said, he saves Romana's life. And end of the episode.
Master?
Oh, here we go. Yes.
Master, yes, he can hear you.
The last thing I was talking about, if you were to follow the A3, it's 121 miles, or the M3, it's 149 miles. Nothing.
Well, nothing
that's
apart from an extremely expensive ferry fare from East Cowes to Southampton. I've got it quite cheap, though, for tomorrow,
to me,
Debbie.
I would consider that to be a day trip.
It would be if we lived on the other side of the water, but when you take in the water as well, it gets ridiculous.
Debbie. I got tomorrow's. I'm going to Birmingham tomorrow. I got that quite cheap, the ferry fare.
Oh, well done.
40 quid.
Oh, wow.
Because I've got the red funnel passes, you know, the cheapy passes. However, the price of the tickets for the, I guess, for the Fantasy Con are going to be something in the region of about £150 for the weekend. Because it's bank holiday weekend and they sting people that are coming over from the mainland, which does make sense. You would have thought they'd like people to come to the island and bring money to the island instead of overcharging people. Well, there you go.
It's ridiculous.
I shouldn't complain just in case they're watching, because I might be asking them for a little bit of a favour in due course.
Across the water.
If you've taken your car across, up to £100.
Day returns are much cheaper. Normally, day return, I'd say, is probably.
If you want to go off and go and visit people, it costs a lot more money. You know, not just the day return.
A day return's about 50 quid. Alexa, how much is £40 in American dollars?
£40 are equivalent to
$53.19.
Ouch.
Ouch now, Kirby, is it? And that's a cheap fare.
That's one of the cheapest. Anyway. Now you see why we're stuck.
Yes, I do.
Fixed link.
And I've got
to
pay.
Do groceries cost more and stuff like that?
I don't know.
A little bit more depending on where you are on the island.
No, also depends whether you shop at Asda or not. We shop at Asda. Some people will shop at Aldi. Some people shop at Lidl's, but we shop at Asda via the internet, and then we get the rest of it at Morrison's at the weekend. Asda is Walmart, if in case you're wondering.
Yes, I know what it is.
Anyway, back to the story.
I end up with what we call the Morrison's headache after being in Morrison's for 5 minutes.
Well, because there's too many bargains to ignore. No?
Sorry?
Okay, fine. I said what? Because there's too many bargains to ignore.
No. Basically, it's just a noisy, ratty, horrible place to be in.
Now, Master, before you continue with episode 4... During about half of your talking about part 3, we weren't paying much attention to what you were talking about because
we were trying to get your attention.
I don't care. Right. So, I don't know if Mary Tam might have been on her period during this particular production because she's got lots of spots on her forehead. But moving on, yeah. So, Grendel,
What?
They have spots on their forehead.
Yeah. She did. Anyway, right. Just kidding.
Okay.
So he's the king prince thingy is getting much, much worse, but he's able to jump out of bed and attack Grendel a couple of times. And then at night, the doctor puts K-9 in a little dinghy and rides around the moat, which is quite funny. And they make their way into the castle with the help of K-9's blaster. And...
I love how protective K-9 is of the Doctor in this episode. And that's so cute.
Grendel starts putting into motion his little plan of marrying the princess, i.e. Mirana. Or is it the princess? It is the princess this time, isn't it? I'm getting confused. And, yes.
Yeah, no, it was...
And then... Yeah, sorry.
It's Romana.
Oh, he's Romana. And then, of course, I love the scene when Grendel decides he's going to have it out with the Doctor by traditional sword fight. Well, sword fight with a sparky thing on the end. And the Doctor
fight takes up most of this last episode.
It's nice in a way because the last time the Doctor's done a sword fight properly is, oh no.
And during this, we're seeing the back of Terry Walsh on both sides.
The last time he did it properly was when he was John Pertwee against the Master in Sea Devils. that was quite good fun. And you obviously know that the Doctor's going to pretend that he can't sword fight. And he sort of wins. And then, of course...
He sort of wins, because Grendel gets away.
Yeah, he wins. And another... Then that's a point in which Grendel jumps off the wall.
Yeah.
Doesn't he get killed by something in the moat, though?
Sorry?
I said, doesn't he get killed by something in the moat?
No.
He should have got. That would have been quite funny. Oh, I forgot to tell you, there's a monster in there.
Well, he got away, and then when the Doctor went back to talk to the others, they didn't question about where he was or anything. They just let him go.
And then
Next time I shall not be so lenient.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, like I said, Well, they didn't really want to be there, did they? Because they knew they got the key to time and then got wrapped in this story, so they really let them get on with it, I suppose. And then, of course, the Prince and Strella are reunited. But the Prince is much better now. He's a miraculous recovery. And they get the key to time.
Romana implied that all he needed was a bit of medicine, but she got interrupted.
Yeah, all right. They get the little segment and realise K-9's disappeared, but he's floating away down the moat. And that makes the Doctor laugh. There we go. And that concludes
the androids
of Tara.
The son of one of the, I think the director's son, possibly someone like that, was under a tarp in the boat, ready to bring the boat back once they were done filming.
Okay, here we go. Before I talk about what I think of the story, we have Laurie Nick saying it's a clever plan, a cunning plan, in fact, Laurie. We are all guilty of living next to attractions, but only going to them if it's a school field trip or you have out-of-town visitors, Kirby. I live an hour away from Disneyland and never go there. Don't say that to him, Laurie. Good grief. Sacrilege.
You know, it has been 11 years since I've been to Disneyland.
Next door to it. She lives next door to it and doesn't go.
I've never been, but we are going to take Ida in the next couple of years.
Which one? Paris or the American
Disneyland.
One?
Real Disneyland.
Have you ever been to the Paris one?
No, never.
Don't tell any children that go there that isn't real Disneyland.
Okay.
It's very good.
I would love to see that Disneyland. That
you wouldn't be disappointed, is it?
Oh, and if he's in Paris, he could just pop over and see us.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. We did that. It's a 12-hour coach trip, you know.
Oh, God.
Anyway, Terry Miles says...
When you go, Debbie, get me a map.
I sent you a map from Disneyland Paris, thank you, Kirby.
Huh?
I sent you a map from Disneyland Paris.
Yes, I know.
So why do you need another one?
Because I collect them.
No worry. Right, Terry Miles says, hi, Adam, Debbie, Kirby. I love the way he spells your name wrong. and Mary, as the TARDIS is behind you, is the Doctor there as well? Well, the scarf is. Oh, God.
Yes, it was the director's son was in the boat.
What's that got to do with what Terry said?
No, I was confirming what I turned on InfoTech.
Running on the line that he was running on originally, you know that.
Terry, I have to apologise to my colleagues.
Why is there a TARDIS behind you?
Ignorance in what he was saying. What?
I said, speaking of that, why is there a TARDIS behind you? Adam?
Because there's a story behind that. Robin Flux. Will you let me speak? I'll bloody tell the story. Good grief. Robin Flux, who is one of the garrison, that's the Isle of Wight garrison, who tend to like going around the place dressed as stormtroopers.
Oh, there's a TARDIS behind you.
He suggested that we don't look very professional when it comes to the collection of memorabilia which is behind the TARDIS. So he said, why don't you put up a white screen or something like that? I haven't got room in here for a white screen. So I thought I compromised and stuck the TARDIS up because then it obscures what's behind. But I thought the door wasn't too bad. He says that it doesn't look very professional when it's been obviously done in my office. So I thought, well, it's part of the charm of the show to have this show done in this particular, because it's been done in this room for so many years.
We are just sat in our rooms talking about it, you know.
To a degree. But I thought, go make a bit of ground, you know, and so I did. I've put a little bit of prop up behind me. To alleviate his concerns that people might not buy tickets for FantasyCon if they happen to watch this show and see that.
Well, good suggestion, and it does look very nice.
Well, you think he's right? You think we're not very professional? Right.
I think it looks good, but I also think...
Right, there, I've got a sound for Mary. Right, anyway, no, I'm just trying to, you know...
She gave me a compliment.
Yeah,
She implied that I was wrong and he was right. Anyway, yeah. So, but basically, Deb has bought a load of cardboard cutouts for the convention. And I said, well, we really do need to test one out to see if it works. And that was my excuse for getting it up. I mean, the TARDIS. We have also, this is an exclusive for the show, we also have Tom Baker Doctor Cutout, Jodie Whittaker Doctor Cutout, another TARDIS, and I've got a small one here somewhere. Oh, it's over there. So won't be taking the small one. I just thought when you buy the big one, you get a little small TARDIS that goes on your desk with it, a little cardboard cutout one.
You don't need to get anything. I can get some bits if you like.
Can you? Where are you going to get them?
I don't know. We'll see what you want. See what prices are like.
I'll just buy them and bring them along. Anyway, right. okay, right. So, what's the story called again? Oh, Android's Atara. Right. It was a very, very good story. Very good fun. And quite really enjoyed getting engrossed in a fun, tongue-in-cheek Doctor Who story. Yes, I didn't see any wobbly sets in this one. I bet you lot probably did. I've got a wobbly set back here, funny enough. Okay, wobbly it is. But yeah, no, I haven't got much of a voice, but I just want to say I really, really enjoy this. This is my favourite of, apart from Pirate Planet, my favourite of the Key to Time series so far. Okay, Debbie, what do you think?
Well, I agree. It's my favourite so far. I really did enjoy
Pirate Planet?
But I really like this one because it was fun. It was a fun romp. It was ridiculous as well. I mean... to have the intricacies of being able to build such perfect androids that we still haven't mastered and to still be basically in the medieval period was fantastic. I thought that was really funny juxtaposition. And I really enjoyed the use of K9 in this, and Romana was just brilliant throughout as the different characters that she was supposed to be. And I loved the guy who played the prince who became the king, as you say, as the android. He was fantastic as that. He really did convey the stillness, which I thought was brilliant. And yeah, the big baddie, he romped through the woods, horse riding, sword fighting, although it was too long. I felt it could have been three.
That's
episodes.
What she said.
Nah. Because the whole of pretty much the entirety of the fourth episode was the sword fight. And yeah, it did get a little bit, they're still doing it. They're still going. And you sort of got in, you know, it's got spaced out by Romana going off to find the princess and things like that. But yeah, it was like they were trying to do one of those huge sword fight romps that you get in Errol Flynn films. And it didn't quite work.
And the tash as well. Don't forget the Errol Flynn tash.
Yes, and it was really, I'm trying to describe it, a heartwarming episode. It was like a friend episode, you know. It was one of those comforting Doctor Who, being brilliant, brilliant, funny, giving you clever ideas, but this is just a by-the-by story while we look for these keys, because the key wasn't the main thing this time. The main thing was someone being mean and, you know, the Doctor playing against him.
It was
and
a panto, I think that's what you'll call it.
Yeah, it was. It was very, very, he's behind you type thing. I must have just been in the right frame of mind for that sort of story, because I really enjoyed it.
Wow, that's unusual, isn't it? Kirby, what did you think?
As I've mentioned before, I've only have just watched all of the Key to Time all the way through just a few months ago.
You don't have to mention that every single episode, Kirby, because this is a podcast, and therefore the episodes are recorded, so people can go back and hear you say it 300 times previous.
This is my third favorite. My favorite is Pirate Planet, and my second favorite so far has been Rebus. Rebus Operation and Andrew Zatara and Power Crawl and Armageddon, whatever you want to call it. I've not seen those before. I've seen those before this a few months ago. So I'm able to actually put things in order, and you guys are not going to like my opinions of the next two. Anyway,
that's okay.
How can you have opinions?
This one was fun, and I like it a little bit better than Stones of Blood.
Hooray!
And I love K9's banter with the Doctor all through it.
You do
all through this.
So I'm just trying to make a puppet out of this woolly version of the 13th Doctor, but it's not working. Have you finished?
Yes.
Okay, listeners. Is Mary, and I'm going to blow my nose.
Hooray! I'm going to surprise you all, maybe. I love this book. This may be one of my favorites.
Wait a minute, Mary. Let Adam blow his nose.
You should turn off his microphone.
You can't turn off the microphone. It's a master's bleep.
I muted
my microphone a few minutes ago because Fred.
You haven't got the master microphone. The master microphone.
Mary, start again.
Yeah, go on, start again. I shouldn't require another blow for a while. Okay. Oh, that sounds a bit rude, doesn't it? Carry on.
Drowned out. I loved this one.
Oh my God! Hang on. Whoa. Mary. Mary.
The last
Mary.
Up until
hang on.
We gotta wait for the fireworks, okay?
Get them, Mary, don't worry.
Now go on, go.
Getting the full show. Up until and through Stones of Blood, I'll say I was hitting a Tom Baker saturation point where I just felt like, you know, he knew he was the star of the show, and he was basically taking over every story with his antics, which I understand sometimes were things he was just making up in the moment. And I was becoming rather tired of all that. And I still saw some of that in Stones of Blood. But in this one,
I understand he did not change a single line. He just was enjoying himself so much with these other actors who were also playing their characters just so on point that he was just having a great time just playing it out the way the script was written. And it shows. He was masterful in this. As
he
were
was
the
masterful,
other
not doctorful. Well, I thought that was quite good.
He was way more under control. To answer Kirby's concern, you know, or anybody's concern about, you know, this silly beast and why did they have androids, but the society was so medieval, sort of. It kind of is answered in how rigid they are with their standards and their traditions. So I get the feeling that they were maintaining, you know, the same way of living and dressing and all that, just because that's what they respected. But because of the plague, which had killed off so many people, they came up with a way to replace the people with androids. So I think that is all, you know, pretty well explained within the
yes. I agree with you.
But in episode 4, I have to agree with Debbie. It just went on way, the sword fight just went on way too long. I was hitting my slider and I kept moving it to kind of get past the sword fight.
I did too.
And it just kept going and going. It's like, oh my Lord, this is most of the episode. So, because sword fights don't really do much for me. So if they could have cut that down or cut it out and just gone on with the story, this could have been a very tight 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but yeah, loved it. Really, really enjoyed it. And that's my opinion.
My goodness.
Ooh. Master.
Oh, here we go. Yes.
As I was watching this again with Fred last night, and that sword fight was going on and on and on, I pointed out to her, hey, you can tell, okay, this is in the studio, and this is on location, and now they're back in the studio, and now they're on location.
Well done, Kirby, for spotting that one.
What made me crazy with the sword fight was how Tom had to keep throwing his scarf back over his shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
I think costumes could have come up with a way to adhere that scarf in such a way that it wouldn't keep falling down.
No, that wouldn't be. That would remove the fun of it. Anyway, right.
Well, this was during the time when they'd taken 2 scarves and sewn them together.
Okay. Right then, Mary Blitz Lang says, I've been to Disney World a few times but grew up wishing I could go to the original in Anaheim. Anaheim?
Yes, Anaheim. That's where it is. Anaheim, California.
Oh, okay. The original Disneyland.
Is it still there?
Anaheim, CA.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Lillian Robbins says, This one is my second favorite of the Key to Time. Fun, fun, fun. Only Pirate Planet is better. She sort of agrees with me, so guess one of those. we also have Kirby put a request out for feedback. I can't read that, so you're going to have to do it for me because you have to save my voice. But Laurie Nix put something into the mix, if you were. Anybody there? Hello? No.
Yeah, we're here.
Well, read it out then for me, please. If you don't mind, you have to find it.
Where is it?
Have you found it yet? Okay.
Yeah, Lori's likes the artwork that I put on there. But it turns out all of the whoflix.wordpress.com articles have artwork of that style.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Kirby, cool. This is an audio presentation. Nobody can see it unless they join the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
Yes, they should. Anyway, Laurie says, you might think the story arc is a bit lackluster and derivative, but come on, pimp suits are what they are wearing this year on Tara. As for the episodes, not sure if it's a romping rehash or a rehash of a romp. If you squint and enjoy it as kind of a third-rate playhouse production of Prisoner of Zenda, it's fine. And then I pointed out Jabba the Hutt.
You did?
Teeny.
Is that it?
And then Laurie asks if that actor, Declan or Declan Mulholland.
Declan.
Does he bring his own Hunchback of Notre Dame outfit to all his roles?
He obviously does.
Yes.
Okay, right. And we've got this. Mrs. Melrose has now had something very interesting pop into her inbox.
thank God it's to her this time.
I've got Night Nurse for tonight, everybody. Night Nurse.
I can't take that anymore. I wish I could. That would have made the last week a bit easier.
That means
Return
I can get some
to
sleep
Zender,
before my long drive.
Androids Unknown or Tarara Bumdie, the would-beast's gone away. Dear 20 Megabyters, The Androids of Tara is, of course, a closely studied examination of the use of political figureheads in power struggles and the traditional matrimonial route to power. The significance of having in this story Romana Adventurelunda herself, Android is of course self-evident. I can hardly pronounce it right because I've got a blocked up nose. It should be noted that while some suggest the Taran Wood Beast is appallingly poorly realised, actually if you realise that it's just dear old Agador with a mask on, I feel you feel better about it. We also learned that the Archimandrite of Tara had a bit of a sideline performing as a psychic on the 1970s, or was that the 1980s stage variety circuit, and later went on to be, or was that had been, a cyber archaeologist amongst other things. All in all, The Androids of Tara is a highly derivative tale, largely based around the 19th century novel The Prisoner of Zenda, with some random reference to the Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf for no adequately explored reason.
Yes.
It's, however, a little prosaic, yet the action is pretty relentless, and all the performances are generally excellent, albeit somewhat stagey rather than naturalistic. Oh, no, it isn't. The early discovery...
Oh, they agree with me again.
This segment provides a new take on the series arc part of this story, which allows some novel action. Which is welcome. There are plenty of great Fourth Doctor lines in this, and more generally, good hats, a lot of very good hats. This serial is perhaps 3.5 minutes too long, as it does seem to go on a bit. Next up, Doctor Who and the big octopus thing, or Green is the Colour of Swamps. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan, but especially about the Green Swamp thing, we actually get to see John Leeson as John Leeson in that story. So.
Romana
de Verat Nalunda.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've had to say it out loud.
Well, your training for that was incorrect, so I let you off that, apparently.
Yeah,
sir. Yes.
Speaking of John Leeson, this past Wednesday, when I went to see Legopolis in the theater, they had a couple of segments ahead of the show.
Well, segments of the Key to Time?
They had some extras. They had Tom Baker, June Hudson, and John Leeson sitting on his sofa discussing things and telling stories. And John Leeson was telling the story about he went to his first convention in the States. No one knew what he looked like. And so they had him enter a canine sound-alike contest, which he lost.
Well done, Kirby. That was a good story.
That was a fun segment. They called that segment Behind the Sofa. And they also had...
You built it up so well,
who
too.
Who played Zoe?
Who played Zoe? Wendy Padbury.
Yeah, they had Wendy, and they had Janet Fielding.
Tegan, we'll get another point.
Nyssa.
Oh, do we get another point? Sarah Sutton.
Sarah Sutton.
I'm doing well, yeah.
They also had those three on a sofa discussing things as well.
I've had my picture taken with Sarah Sutton. It's up there underneath the picture of me, Debbie, and Mark Gatiss, who was on TV
recently.
Well,
I'll be meeting Janet in about 2 months.
Oh. Yeah, it's a shame about John Leeson, really, because you know he's probably one of the most fascinating actors to appear in Doctor Who, but nobody knows what he looks like. So he's not exactly a draw, is he, to a convention?
Yeah. He would be for me.
Oh, we're going to have John Leeson as our guest. Plymouth XE. He's only one of the most important people. Yeah,
if they advertise his real face next to the K-9, I think that would help people.
No, people more interested in seeing the K-9, not necessarily John.
In case you haven't been able to figure it out, I love K-9.
So do I. But I'm just thinking that, you know, people, you have to be a hardcore Doctor Who fan to know who John Leeson is and to recognise him, really. I do. I'm a hardcore Doctor Who fan. So I'd be delighted if I went to a con and he was there. But Just, you know, it's one of those problems, isn't it? Anyway. Right then, so that sort of concludes the feedback section of the show, unless I've had anything last minute drop in. Let's have a look. Do I have anything from last week? No. Something last minute. Shush. Something last minute has indeed dropped in.
Yay!
Hello to the Timmy Mac Podcast, it's Ian Kirk. When the Stones had blowed, Vivian Fay hung out with the Stones and ended up as a rock chick. The Androids of Tara by David Fisher. These are not the droids you are looking for. A medieval romp which allows Tom Baker to act up and to have a sword fight with a villain. K-9 also fights a swordsman. Mary Tam gets to play Romana and a princess and two androids. Her lucky colour is purple. Cyril Shapps usually plays a worried foreigner.
Yes.
Here, he plays a worried archimandrite, a religious official on Tara, and also in the Eastern Orthodox Church on Earth. In the film Bird Box, a woman and her children must walk through a forest blindfold to avoid looking at unearthly creatures. In the Doctor Who story, Flesh and Stone, Amy Pond must walk through a forest blindfold to avoid looking at unearthly creatures.
Well, evil.
It can't be easy.
Sleeping angels. With eyes
closed. No, it isn't. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian, for saving our section of feedback there. Okay. Now it's time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Now, you've got a choice of questions. You can either have questions from last week's not used quiz, or we can go for the a collection of cards I picked up from the Trivial Pursuit box. Gone very quiet.
Well, I'll lose either way, so...
Oh, I'm such an optimist. We'll go for the cards.
I might not win.
We'll go for the cards then. Right then. Okay, so Mary, who do you think's going to win?
Debbie.
Okay. Debbie, who do you think's going to win?
Oh, just say me, but I probably
won't. Oh, go on then. You said you. That's it. You're too late. You can't back out of it now. And Kirby, who do you think's going to win?
Debbie.
Well, that's really put a scupper in the works. I suppose it's going to be Mary, is it?
Yes, Debbie, Mary.
Yeah, it'll be Mary all the way
Mary,
across.
Mary.
Well, that really does defeat the object a little bit. Magic just crumpling up all my paperwork.
Okay. Magic.
Okay, I'll put it down anyway, even though it's rather ruined my quiz. But thanks, everybody, for that.
What do you mean it's ruined your quiz?
Well, it has, isn't it?
Because it doesn't add in any surprises at the end. We have to, in order to liven it up, some of us have to have different people.
You don't have to explain it.
No, I knew what you meant, but yeah. Never mind.
Lillian Robin says, this one, I've done that one. Laurie Nick says, everyone loves it when Leeson comes to cons. And then she says, wow, a Bird Box reference. I hear Bird Box references in this house all the time.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to see it.
And Fortnite, for that matter.
Yeah, I don't want to either.
Nor do I. Who's fiddling? Somebody's fiddling near their microphone.
Not me.
No, Tom's doing stuff in the kitchen. You might be hearing that, but I'm not here doing anything with my microphone.
It's sort of noise. Okay, so we move on with the quiz. So we've had the superfluous, stupid answers to that previous question. Mary?
Maybe you ought to institute a rule that you can't vote for yourself.
No. That'll be good, though, but no. You could put it... We might have to do that if this carries on. Right then, Mary.
Yes?
In the event of emergency program becoming active, what would TARDIS do once it reached Earth?
I have no idea.
Anybody? Oh, sorry, I forgot to do this. Anybody?
Something to do with the British government, isn't it?
No, it's die. It would die to ensure nobody got their hands on the Time Lord technology. Excuse me, I just had to cough. Right then, so that's still in a zero for Mary. Debbie.
Yes.
Of which companion does the second doctor ask, just act stupid, do you think you can manage that?
Is it Jamie? Yay!
I should have played your joke. Very good.
You don't have to give the answer in the form of a question.
I was guessing, that's yeah. why.
All right. I'm just going to say, for the Facebook viewers, if Facebook decides to end the transmission, goodbye. Listen to the rest of the podcast. If it doesn't, we'll carry on. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because it might end it after an hour. It seems to have a limit on it now. Oh, we actually have gone past the hour now, so hopefully it will still be running. To Kirby.
Master.
In Army of Ghosts, what does the bazoolium gift that Rose gives her mum predict when it changes temperature?
I have no idea.
Oh, that doesn't happen very often, does it, anybody? It's all gone quiet over there. The answer is the weather. Okay, there's 4 points in the bonus pot. Of course, if you use your joker on this question, you will double your points, or double that 4 points. So here we go. Bonus pot question is this. Which French king that the 10th Doctor met and saved from the clockwork robots was on the throne between 1715 and 1774? Has to be the right one, by the way. It's all gone quiet over there.
Well, I think it was... yeah, I'm going to play my joker. It's still with one or the other. Louis the 15th. Yes!
Oh,
wow.
See, I would have guessed the 14th.
It's one of the Louis.
Yeah, I would have guessed the 14th, which is why
I know. I was going towards the 14th, but I have watched Versailles a lot recently, and there's nothing about Madame de Pompadour in that, so I thought I'd go for the 15th.
Whatever. Right, yeah, so the current scores are, in first place with 10 points is Debbie, and in last place with no points each is Mary and Kirby. Next question goes to Mary. How tall are the silents, Mary? How tall are the silents?
I'm guessing 7 feet.
Your guessing isn't too bad as well. Anybody?
6'7".
Ooh, if it was a who gets the nearest, you would have got it at 6'5".
Aww.
Okay, right. Next question goes to Debbie.
Yep.
What was the name of the carry-on film that William Hartnell starred in as the titular character?
Unfair.
Carry-on Sergeant.
Say that again, Debbie, sorry.
Carry-on Sergeant.
Apparently, Kirby thought it was Carry-on Unfair. I don't remember there being a carry-on film called Carry-on Unfair.
Master,
what?
I'm going to ask Mary this, and my answer will probably be the same.
Here we go.
How many carry-on films have you seen?
Goose egg.
I've just dropped my car because of you lot.
What did you say, Mary?
I said goose egg. That means nothing. Zero.
How many have you seen, Kirby?
You know how many carry-on films I've seen? Nothing.
Okay. Do you want to know how many people care? Nobody.
Well, no, the thing is that was an unfair question. Because,
it's not an unfair question.
Bet,
it is luck of the draw.
Debbie has seen lots of them.
Five.
It's a question about William Hartnell. And a lot to doctor. I don't know. I didn't write these questions, but you just have to answer them. Right. Bonus.
If I get a British one next time, throw it away. And let's
This is Kirby's question.
British edition of this guessing game.
It's a British program, I suppose it must be. Kirby.
Master.
On what planet does the fifth doctor contract spectrox toxemia and sacrifices his life for Perry? Gotta get the right planet,
one of the
mate.
Moons of Androzani.
What?
It's one of the moons of Androzani.
You need
no,
to get
Androzani
the what it says on the card.
Hmm?
You have to say what it says on the card.
I don't know what it says on the card. Androzani Minor?
He must have seen it. I just showed it to the bloody camera.
What?
Never mind. I just showed it to the camera.
Well, I'm not watching the feed, so
oh,
I don't know.
Oh, that's all right then, isn't it? Okay, bonus bot question is this one. Has 2 points, by the way. With which intergalactic rogue does Mel Bush decide to travel the universe with, leaving the Seventh Doctor with a new companion?
Oh, gosh.
No, it wasn't him.
I know.
Go on, then. Oh, it's your question anyway. Don't, oh, no, you do know. Sorry, it's bonus. No, but, yeah. Go on, then. Go on, then. Who is it? Who is it?
Sevelon Blitz?
Yeah.
You could have played your Joker then, Kirby.
Oh, I could have. Well, I wasn't quite sure.
Okay.
But I was listening to a podcast that was talking about how many times he showed up during the Seventh Doctor's era.
Oh, okay, right. Next question goes to Mary.
Mary!
Oh, dear. Right. You won't get this one. Here we go. Right.
Oh,
remember what we get with if you answer, you won't get this one question correctly. Okay? It's this. In Time Crash, the Fifth and Tenth Doctors realise that a time collision could create a hole in space-time vortex the size of which European country? There's four possibilities here. So you do have a chance of getting this, but I still think it's going to be you won't get this one. So the options are, Mary, the options are Spain, yeah. Denmark, Belgium, or Germany.
I know.
I'm going to guess Germany.
All right, so that's 2 points going to bonus point. Kirby?
Belgium. And what do you mean you won't get this one?
Well, she didn't get it.
Of course I knew that one.
She didn't get it. It was her question.
It's one of the best swear words in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Absolutely.
I don't know what you're going on about, but never mind.
Remember, because it's associated with hitchhikers, yeah. I know it.
Yeah.
And secondly, my wife's family, her mother's side of the family came from Belgium.
Well, did you know that, Mary?
No, I didn't know any of that, and I've never seen it.
Just tell him to shut up. Right then, so there's 2 points. Oh, God, sorry, it's Kirby's question. No, it's Debbie's question. Lost. Sorry.
Okay.
No, it was Mary's question.
No, yeah. But now it's Debbie's question. In what year did the flood infiltrate? I can't even say that. The flood can I say that one again? I've got a bad voice, you know. In what year did the flood infiltrate Bowie Base 1?
Bowie Base 1?
Yeah, you won't get this one. Anybody?
No.
Nope.
Okay. 2059.
And I no longer cheat, so.
And he talked over the answer then. 2059.
Oh, it's when they got to the moon, wasn't it?
Excellent. Right, Kirby.
Master.
Where does the Tenth Doctor trap Sister of Mine of Family of Blood?
I know.
She's inside the mirror.
Not quite. No.
More specific.
No, go on in, Debbie.
She's inside every mirror. She's the glint that you see, the shadow that you see.
Great. Okay, 5 points.
I love that. That was such a poetic ending. I love that.
It was, indeed. Get up to? It's a bonus pot question. 5 points. Two of you haven't played Jokers. Here's the scores. No, I'll do that afterwards. Right then. Okay, listen up. Which ex-James Bond played the Lord President of Gallifrey in the end?
I know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Timothy Dalton.
God.
There were options available, but she got ahead of the options.
Timothy Dalton.
Hang on, this has gone funny. Right, so I'm just adding Debbie's new points on. And
Did you want to tell us the options?
I'm busy at the moment, thank you. The options were Sean Connery, Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, and Piers Brosnan. go. It was interesting, wasn't it? The scores are: in last place with no points, it's Mary. In second place with 5 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 18 points, it's Debbie. Next question goes to Mary. What powerful cosmic device does the White Guardian send the Fourth Doctor on an epic quest to find six segments of?
Play your Joker.
Play your Joker.
Let me think about that one. I'll play my Joker. The key to time.
Well done.
Yay!
Thank you.
Debbie.
Yes.
What is the name of the Silurian Madame Vastra's human wife?
I know.
Jenny. No. Oh, it is.
She knows too.
Yeah, it is. It's Jenny. Yeah.
Kirby.
Master.
In The Impossible Planet, what is K-37 Gem 5 better known as?
Impossible Planet. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
Anybody?
No.
Black hole.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
It was a possible planet, which was impossible because it was actually orbiting a black hole. That's why it was impossible. I thought it was quite easy, that one.
That pair of stories is not my favourite.
Okay. 2 points in the bonus spot. What 1928 ballot work by Ravel was Toby Zed listening to when the Beast infiltrated his mind while he was working on the ancient Veltino inscriptions? Bit of music by Ravel.
Okay.
Go on then, Mary.
Claro. Thank you.
Really surprised Debbie didn't have a go at that one.
Okay. Did you say ballet?
It says here ballet work. I said ballet. I said ballet. It was ballet. Okay. Ballet.
Claro.
Sorry. I may have mispronunciated it. That was the bonus pot question, wasn't it? Okay.
Yes.
Well, draw a line under it then. So the final score, final scores, and is rather.
Oh, we're done.
You are done. Kirby gets a point deducted because he didn't play his Joker. And the final scores are: in last place with 4 points, Kirby; in second place with 6 points, Mary; but the winner this week is Debbie.
Wow.
20 points. Oh, what happened there?
Hello.
I must have accidentally paused the theme tune. Before we move to Doctor Who News, specifically from DoctorWhoNews.net, I'm very cross with DoctorWhoNews.net.
Why?
Because twice I've emailed them to say about FantasyCon, and they twice have done absolutely nothing about my emails, not even a reply. So I'm not very happy with them. Yet there's a, if you click on their thing, there is a events page, and they do list certain conventions and events as well. Especially, including an afternoon with Andrew Cartmell, Lord President of the show. Right, so there you go. News. Not a lot of news, actually. There's lots of Lethbridge Stewart novels coming out.
Never mind.
What?
Yeah, they don't seem to be going far in advance, which may be the reason.
I don't care.
Because they've only got things listed for March, April, and May.
Yeah, still no excuse. They could have emailed me back and said, thank you for that information. We'll put it on the website in due course. But they didn't say anything. I think it's rude. Jodie Whittaker is offered the freedom of the City of London, but she's from somewhere in Yorkshire.
Yeah, doesn't it mean she can now walk, she can now herd sheep across Tower Bridge or something like that?
Yeah, something
isn't
like that.
Isn't that what it means?
Why? She was on Comic Relief, by the way, but briefly, on Friday night, just doing a little thing to camera for... just doing the phone numbers and how to raise money for Comic Relief. Just saying. Big Finish collaborates. Celebrates International Women's Day. Very good friend of the show, Louise Jameson, is pictured with Alex Kingston, because there's a story called The 8th of March. Lots of people in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's all the female leads of various Big Finish stories.
Cool. So I'm not going to play the audio for that one, but there is an audio to play. Macroterra's coming out at last. It says originally broadcast. When is it released? 25th of March? Oh, for download. Then there's a Blu-ray edition and a DVD edition. I must get that. It looks like it's coming out very soon. It says originally. Yeah, 25th of March. So, yeah, at last, the Macroterra, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, God, here we go. Yes.
I just posted on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group a AnimeUKNews.net does have a announcement about FantasyCon.
Oh, I don't know how they got that, but that's good. And you got the name of our group wrong then, by the way, Kirby. You forgot the which you can join bit, just saying.
It doesn't say which you can join on there.
No, this something's a silent, but it is part of the name. But you haven't. I do run out of characters when you actually add them to Facebook. John Levine autobiography. We talked about that last time, so we're caught up with that. Right. So that means I can now talk about FantasyCon.
Right.
So I'm going to go to my website, our website, I beg your pardon, because I can't remember it off the top of my head. So if you want to go to our website, which I have tarted up a bit, not a lot, but a bit, it's FantasyCon.net. Is that quite clear, everybody?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And then what happens when I type it in? It says site can't be reached. You know why? Because I put too many T's in it. FantasyCon.net. You type that in and you get our sort of a opening page. It has all our current announcements in. But if you go to the news page, I've started this off, Debbie, because now when you put the mouse over the various little tabs at the top, it goes orange. It's quite clever, isn't it? So we have, I'll go through all of them in case you haven't listened to previous shows. We have Alistair Pearson, the first one on board. I got very emotional when he said yes to that. Ben Shoveler is our stage host.
That's going to be so cool.
It's going to be extremely cool, but he's got to go back for a job on the Saturday night before he comes over again on for the Sunday gig. So, what?
Well, I hope the ferries are working.
Yeah. Yes.
The person who posted this on Anime UK News says he's running the audio desk at FantasyCon.
Now, could that possibly be Roy Spearman, who was a guest host on the show twice in the early days?
Yes.
He runs Big and Bold Solutions. Big and Bold Solutions, man. He's doing that for us. Nice, isn't he?
Yes.
Can I carry on with the people who are coming to the convention, please?
You may carry on.
That's very kind. Jo Lofthouse will be there doing some amazing face painting. She's very talented. And we've got Andrew Smith, who's written some Doctor Who. He's coming along.
I just watched that for the first time this past week.
And I found him somewhere to stay, thanks to the very kind That 60s Place in Cowes. They are kind for finding me somewhere, but I do have to pay for it. Well, at least the convention has to pay for it, I should say. But it's a very expensive time of year, and they've done us a deal.
Yeah, would you believe I'd never seen Full Circle before last week?
I wouldn't really have an opinion one way or another. Robert Shearman is also coming along, and he's going to be absolutely fab. He's a very nice chap, very interesting, very engaging. Have any of you ever met Rob Shearman before?
No. Oh, yes, I've met Rob Shearman.
He's nice, isn't he?
Oh, he is so nice.
And I'll tell you what, Jeff Waddle got very excited when he won the little prize of the little drawing that Rob did of the Dalek on one of our little cards that he did it on. So.
Yeah, I've got his Dalek drawings on two of the books that I had him autograph.
Oh, cool. We also have, and this is one of my most exciting things, is the 51st Legion Isle of Wight Garrison are coming along. And they also set up amazing Star Wars sets, and they've got a great big area to do with it. So if you're a fan of Star Wars, you're not going to be disappointed. You just will be standing there with your jaw hitting the ground because it's just amazing. And I'm very excited that they're coming
along.
Did
they do that? They've set those up at those previous two conventions,
yes,
right?
Yes, but it's a much smaller scale.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah.
We also have Heroes, a very nice retailer down Scarrett's Lane in Newport, who were the first to come on board and support it. In fact, actually the first moment I started telling people about it, they come straight on to support us. And they'll be bringing along a lot of lovely merchandise to sell at the event. And then we had, I got an email from a very nice man called Martin Ballantyne. Now, he was a Joker's henchman in the Heath Ledger version of Batman. I know, the Heath Ledger version of the Joker, I should say. And it's quite exciting. And he's also been in a couple of Harry Potter films, so he's got a few stories to tell. I can see you're really interested in that one. Thank you for that. And another one I'm really excited about is Aaron Eisted, depending on how you want to pronounce Aaron. He's the Isle of Wight's most talented magician.
Yep.
And he's just amazing. And he's a member, the only, I think, Isle of Wight magician, who, apart from Mr. Randini, who's a member of the Magic Circle. And very lucky to have him, especially that time of year. And the first of our little character announcements is that Davros is coming along. Tom would have seen Davros and Isla and yourself via the video feed I did last Saturday, because the props that Mr. Griffiths has actually put together are absolutely spot on. I don't know how he does it, but he's probably made the best replica Daleks and Cybermen I've ever seen. And that's Anthony Griffiths, by the way. He's also done a load of other props I haven't announced yet. I will say, he sent me a picture of his Ood. I'm yet to announce that but that will be coming along with a canine and another Dalek, and, of course, Chris Kane's Dalek, which is a very pretty Dalek as well. And I did post a video on the FantasyCon Facebook page that we did a live little thing that when we did that little event down at that 60s place in Cowes, and Les Elmore was overwhelmed by the toilet in that place, which is it was basically a homage to Doctor Who.
Those pictures were great, by the way.
Yeah, you didn't get to see the toilet.
No, I love that. It's so cool.
Yeah, I know the pictures were great. I took them. As I say, if I haven't missed anything, no, that's about it, really. So we're being supported by Heroes, the Party Shop in Shanklin, and the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, That 60s Place, Joe Lofthouse, and Big and Bold Solutions, who and all of you guys, your support is most welcome. And, of course, Master of Disguise in Newport have been fantastic as well. So, so please come if you live in Great Britain. Come even more if you live in America. I know it's a quite expensive trip, but we just need people to buy tickets. So more tickets we sell, the more we can put at the event. So buy your tickets. Even if you're coming for free, buy a ticket. But there you go. I'm not going to speak too much about the sponsorship side of things, because there's not a lot going on in regards to anything changing, apart from they have renewed, both of them, both Who Won and Lavazzi, have renewed their sponsorship for another year. Now, I've actually, instead of putting that sponsorship money into the podcast, I've put it in to FantasyCon. So essentially, Lavazzi have now become I don't know it yet, a sort of co-sponsor of FantasyCon. So we're hoping to get some Lavazzi gear on sale at the event as well. We're in discussions, shall we say, that we can get some gear from that for the event from them. So that'd be good fun. So, yeah, that's about it, really. I've got to go and have a bath. I've got to take some medication. This is night nurse here. And get enough sleep to get up at 4 a.m. tomorrow for a drive up to Birmingham for the photography show. So if you're watching this, you're actually at the photography show, you might see me up there. I would say, by the time it goes out on audio, it would be all done and finished, so you won't get to see me at all. So, I've got an email come through. Oh, it's an Amazon email. Yeah. I tell you what, before I go, I've been trying to order a Funko Pop, Freddie Mercury Funko Pop, for about 6 months now, and every place I order it from lets me down.
Yeah, I've had that with Hoggle from Labyrinth. Every time I've tried to order one, I've ordered it, paid for it, nothing's happened.
It's on pre-order. Well, it's not on pre-order, because I've seen people with the blimmin' things. So, very annoying.
Debbie?
Yeah?
If you, by the way, Conquistorbus is not necessarily dead. It's just not going to be held this year.
Yeah, it's not on this year.
If you ever come to Conquistorbus, you can see Hoggle about an hour outside of there.
Oh, brilliant.
The frustrating thing is still further in regards to Funko Pops is that the big new and last range of Big Bang Theory Funko Pops are coming out. And I ordered them from a place that said guaranteed you will get them. And I keep on getting messages from some saying that the release date is being extended or being postponed and stuff like that. Now, a particular thing that's good about this range of Big Bang Theory characters is it includes Stuart. So it's quite nice. I'm hoping to get the full collection. And then I can sell the two ones behind the TARDIS, Raj and Leonard. So, yeah. That's about it, really. So next week, see when we're going to record. The story we're doing next week is the
Crawl.
Power of Crawl. Oh, it is next week. Woo! 24th of March. So we can do it next week, everybody.
Okay.
Oh, I've got a meeting with the garrison, actually, Debbie.
I start my week's holiday.
Attention. I've got a meeting with the garrison on Tuesday at 7 o'clock at Cowes Enterprise College. So if you want to come along to that, you're welcome.
Oh yes, please.
They're not going to be dressed in their costumes, by the way.
No, I know. It's just yeah.
Stay up for that. So yeah. And another bit of news for FantasyCon. I forgot to mention this, but there is I did actually blurt on about this on the FantasyCon. I'll do more in-depth news on the FantasyCon Facebook page. But we got the cosplay competitions more or less sort of my ideas. They're going to be called the Coscas. Isn't that clever, everybody? The Coscas.
Come on.
I did look it up. No one else has come up with that idea. So we'll have each day the best under 15, best male, best female, best makeup, best Doctor Who cosplayer, most original concept, and the best of day. So that should be quite good fun.
Master?
Oh, what now?
No, it's a valid question. Speaking of next week's recording, your time doesn't change until the end of the month, correct?
No, yes.
So Mary and I, again, 3 o'clock, Mary, not 2.
Yes. Okay. I forgot to mention Games of Foam.
Oh, yeah, that looks like
Nerf Wars is coming to FantasyCon, so that's going to be amazing fun. I won't be partaking because I'll be too busy. It's age 7 upwards, anybody who wants to bring their children along for that one. But yeah, they're coming along to course up. I did get a sort of message from Alex Watts, who's running the CGI con setup, which is Pop Goes the Culture, 3 times this year. And he said, oh, we've doing something like that as well. But he didn't know that we were as well, so that's going to be a bit of an awkward one. But yeah, so there you go. That's it then. You can all go off now. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
2 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.